sound travels at roughly 330 meters per second, depending on temperature and humidity of the air. So if you're around a campfire, there's all these sound effects. You can get these sound phenomena all the time. And one of the things we want to do is talk about the how you experience the speed of sound. Your everyday experience can be the distance of time between a thunderclap and hearing the thunder. That's a two-point way of comparing the speed of light with the speed of sound. Probably a little bit complex. There's other things where you can look up at aircraft and you can see the aircraft travelling ahead of where the sound appears to be coming from. That's a general thing that you experience. And then, obviously, a more social thing you can experience is not so obvious, is when you're timing a race. You have flag goes down. When the flag goes down, the person fires the starting gun. That's instantaneously for the people near the starting line. And the person starts timing, not from when they hear the sound of the sound, but when they see the flag drop or the little light occur. It's only a bit more detailed experience when you experience that. Not all students will experience it. They may hear about it, but hearing about it and these point things are a little bit limited, and it's time to listen to some of the things that I've done to improve the experience of learning about sound, the speed of sound. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. In this case, we're going to have a little bit of a depth of what we mean by speed of sound and some of the terms, and then we'll discuss a experience which has student participation. You can actually observe the sound wave travelling more than actually deducing that there must be a sound wave, deducing that there must be a delay, and it's a student participation which I'm aiming for. There is a YouTube of me doing this several years ago, and I have some sort of advantages or things to improve from it. And it's sort of another way that people can hear the speed of sound differences is that sort of echo, or obviously echoes, but the echoes between a walkie-talkie and actually hearing the person. So what can happen is someone can shout out, it can be picked up with a walkie-talkie, so that gets to you instantly, and then the sound arrives a bit later. Always a bit complicated in terms of visualising what's going on. So let's get into sound, medium, waves and stuff like that. So we have to tick off a few points, not necessarily to understand, but naming points. So a medium is any substance which has interaction between its particles. So you move one particle, it moves the next, and it refers to something in which a wave travels. So water, air, rock, sound can travel that through that. For light, we say that space has nothing in it, it's not a medium. We might get into that a bit more, but air, liquid, glass, the medium for light. It refers just simply to the substance for which a wave phenomena will occur. Now, the wave phenomena in general occurs because particles are held within the medium, so we begin to build the model of it. So components, small components, particles, small regions are held, and we can consider that region can be moved within that medium. So things can so we're discussing the particle, and the particle will be sprung within that medium. So you need that the two aspects. You have a particle and a restoring force, and a particle which is sitting at the position, its natural position, is called its equilibrium position, and a disturbance will move that particle from that position by a distance called the amplitude, and that particle will be restored to its equilibrium position by adjacent particles, and that for every force is an equal and opposite force. That restoring force will of a neighbour with this original particle will disturb that particle. That force will cause that particle, as you're causing one particle to accelerate down to its equilibrium position, you're causing the next particle further along to start to accelerate back up to the original position of the original particle. And this is a wave phenomenon. So writing the formula for individual particles separated by a distance with a restoring force has a wave equation solution that the energy or displacement travels along. So we have start to get a few terms here. So that you have a particle and equilibrium position, and medium are the sort of the base terms to get in, and restoring force, and then disturbing from equilibrium is called the amplitude, and you have the wave equation, which again obviously you can't talk about too much in school, but there's this phenomena of particles moving across and getting your wave equation. So yeah, I guess I learned myself personally about waves gently, and then had the wave equation thrust upon it. But there is for sure that at university you get to understand wave equations and the model which stems from it, and then that comes back with it. So that's the essence of a wave equation. For that interruption, you won't hear it there, because by the magic of Audacity, the podcasts are put together. What is it? I can't drive, and my wife's blind, so someone has had to. We've got this fantastic community service thing where they have someone come along and take her driving. So I'll be driving in a week or so. It's time after my heart operation, about 6 weeks. 6 weeks ago. So let's get back to it again. So we're discussing the mechanics of a wave, a medium, a particle in a medium being displaced by a particular position, and the restoration force causing neighbouring particles to be displaced. And this is described by a wave equation, but this causes a travelling wave. So you get the terms medium, displacement, travelling. And at this stage, and we are discussing student activities, you can show, get students to hold their hands and have a wave travel forward, like swing their hands forward and have it travel forward. Then you have the, obviously I'm going to try and build into this, you've got this slinky spring, so this is a long several metre spring, and there is a way of launching a wave. So holding both ends of the spring, you're going to launch a wave along it, but there is a precise way of launching a wave, so I may as well give you the way of doing this. And this is from knowing the wave equation, and sort of knowing what's going on, how you can actually generate a nice crisp wave. So you have this spring, you draw in a section of spring and hold it flat with your left hand. So it requires having something to hold the end of the string down, and you have to hold the spring at two other points. So it's three points held, the end of the spring, 30 centimetres into the spring, a foot or so into the spring, and then holding the spring again another foot out. I'm saying that for our American listeners, or 60 centimetres out. So you hold it 60 centimetres out with your left hand. With your right hand, you draw, extend the spring out to the right, further out to the right. So rather than being a straight line, there's this preformed wave which goes from where you're holding it, say between your knees, up to your right and your other and your left, which is directly in front of you. So you have a deformation. Now the important thing to do is to, and you've pulled that out, say 50 centimetres. These distances won't make exact sense, but they're easy to remember numbers more than the exact distances. So this pulled out, and the important thing is to release both your right and left hands at exactly precisely the same time. And what will happen is that that disturbance will travel through your spring. So your wave to the side will travel through the other side. So you can instantly show an individual wave pulse travelling down your spring. So this is your second activity. Your first activity is the students to actually hold their hands and be a medium with a restoring force. Then you have a medium displaced with a restoring force and demonstrate in real life this happening. Now, later on, there will be a student on the opposite side holding this down. And there'll be the intention to imitate exactly what you're doing and send a wave pulse back to you. The wave pulse will travel forward and backwards from the student. And so you're at one stage, across the other side of the classroom is the student, and the spring is laid on the ground. Now what will happen is the pulse will travel all the way up. The student will try and hold it down, and their brain will start sending pulses to their hands to hold that spring stationary, and in order to do it, their brain will actually send a wave pulse further back. So you'll see your wave pulse travel up and down the spring several times, and there is a temptation, obviously, for the student to launch a wave and to get the two waves to collide. So there's an activity which you can go through, and so this is sort of knowing the wave equation. You can set out the terms of the wave equation more, and you can actually set up an experiment and sort of build an experience along with that. That is through the student's hands, and then through this slinky spring. Where you've got displacement and the mass of the spring, you can have different masses. And different stiffness of the spring. So the things affecting the speed of the wave is the mass of the spring and the comparative restoring force. And you can have transverse waves, which you demonstrate. Similarly, you can have a system where you grab the spring and pull it back towards you. That is have a region which is well compressed, released both at the same time, and a compression wave can go forward. So the restoring force spring equation can go transverse or longitudinal. So transverse is from side to side, longitudinal is along the direction of wavefront of the wave. These are all, I suppose, descriptive terms. People confuse this with actual, customary naming knowledge with the actual in-depth knowledge. People often write tests about it where they test the customary knowledge, and you can quickly then get a student to score 100% on a customary knowledge test, that is, naming things like wavelengths, amplitude, and various other things, but then they can't predict what will happen with the spring because they have got no mechanical knowledge of what's going on. So this next activity, which I want to describe, is a one which develops the idea of particularly what a sound wave is. So the types of activities you can do with sound waves, and the idea that the sound wave travels more slowly. Rather than talking about the elaborate lab equipment that you can use to use it, I've got an external activity which includes the starter pistol, the athletic starter pistol, which is at school, and you may not have that. You may have to replace that with a car horn, and just looking at the way that these activities have done. Now, bear in mind that I'm an experimental scientist, so I just mechanically work through the equations and what some of the features are. So with the any activity which involves a student registering a sound wave or anything which involves the stopwatch, you've got the psychological barrier of the natural processing time from the stimulus to the brain to the nerve pulse in. Now, that will take a certain amount of time. Now, it's not necessarily that it has to be fast, it has to be consistent. So if students have a learned behaviour or can observe, you will see that their response after a bit of practice becomes very good, and then as they become bored, it becomes longer. So you can often get an experiment which measures student engagement more than anything else. So here's the orientation and direction for one, which sort of is designed to remove the response effect. So what happens is that a sound wave will hit you. The sound wave has to be processed by the head and you've got to have the nervous response, so it has to be processed by the brain. It's very, very interesting that that sound response reflex can be faster than central vision reflexes, but peripheral vision reflex, particularly with if there's danger towards you, can be actually very, very fast. So depends exactly what's going on. So this is an experiment to eliminate that effect. So the fundamental thing is to have the sound wave where this student is, or group of students, are facing away from you, and they drop their hands when they hear a sound. And you've got more than one student. You can have a whole series of students spaced at, say, 15, 20-meter intervals with their arms out, flags out. And when they hear the sound, their arms drop down. So you can have one or two students per station. So this tends to average out. They're facing away from you. So they will hear the sound wave first, and the students ahead of them will not react, so they've got no visual cues. And so we have this situation where you have you can film it, and as you in this case fire the starter's cap, and then you may have problems in a school firing the starter's ground because it needs political negotiation with your PE department and all these types of things. You can use a car horn, sort of get in a car. Now, to activate this, to control it, it's actually fact. You want to get all students to lift their hands up at a certain time. So they're all facing away from you. So if you have a walkie-talkie to the far distance, you can get the students to give a visual sign, or you can give a audible sign. But if you actually get this stretched up over 300 meters or even up to a good fraction of a kilometer, if you can do it, the shouting up at the orders is not as good as having a walkie-talkie to the farthest student and get them to raise their arms. And so when all the students see all the arms raised, if you see a student in front of you with the arms raised, you raise your arms as well. So you set off the explosion, sorry, the starter's cap or the horn. Again, it's best to, you can also have a walkie-talkie to, so this is a two-way radio or a mobile phone, if you're absolutely desperate on this front, to the student in the car. Obviously, you can get them just to hit, don't give them the ignition keys, just press the horn. The student at the far end, so you can get the student at the far end to raise their arms, and then everyone automatically raises their arms. The student presses the horn, and as the sound waves pass, you can see the arms drop, and there is this sufficient drop because there's no cue. They will drop it fairly accurately on cue, and it is a phenomenon to see. Now, you can film it two waves. You can film it from the car horn. It's actually quite good to see. So the horn goes, the sound departs, and you see the sound wave, visually see the sound wave travel through space. You can also have a sound wave at the sound wave, the student at the film it from the student at the farthest point, some 400 metres away. Now, 400 metres away is a full second. What happens is it's all silent, and you suddenly see these students drop their hands with no noise, and then when the student in front of you drops their hand sound, you can actually hear the sound waves. So that's a very impressive representation of doing this, the speed of sound. And then, of course, you can get them to mark their positions on Google Maps. You can enlarge, get a satellite image of where they are, and with the have a split screen, so as the arms are dropping down, you can have the actual position of the students marked on Google Maps, and actually show physically, graphically show the line moving forward. For this, you need split screen Camtasia video editing software, and so you can actually physically show the line going through. There's again, in filming students, you've got to get their permission and understanding. It's best to get a student to film other students to avoid that, but you have to go through it, and then even after permission, you have to go through and see whether they give permission, even for inside class. It's one of those things that you have to work through. So that's just a demonstration. Having seen on the internet versions of this, this is by far all the most accurate demonstration I've seen. To see the arms, go down. So you have the having the arms up and drop down. It's a easier signal to send from the brain, because the brain is, it's an unnatural position. The brain is saying hold up, and then the drop down is in terms of the consistency of the psychological pause are the same. So you've got a definite psychological pause between when the shockwave hits you. There's a shockwave, there's half a millisecond or something like that, not half a millisecond, a few milliseconds before, I think roughly 20 milliseconds, 20, 25, around that time of milliseconds between the audio input and the human response. And if you get two students, you can actually see the relative, you can test relative amount. And it's randomising the order in which students do it. It gets them very much involved, and gets them involved with the idea of a sound wave travelling through space. There are many, many more wave equations to get through, but that's a very good practical activity, which is nice and clean. There's the students hear it and have a response, and you can actually visually see the difference. So I hope that you can implement it in your own country out there. Thanks for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.